Good morning, ladies.
Good morning,
we decided to make a breakfast, after breakfast lecture. Usually the lectures are all at night. So if I'm already here in Canada, why not, you know? So I encourage you to ask me all your questions. I'm sure you have many questions, especially things that relate to ladies. I will start in the first few minutes speaking about the topic we chose, but then you can go to any topic you want. Better I answer your question than force a lecture on you. I've been dealing with Kiruv, bringing Jews close to Torah and to Judaism for almost 17 years by now. And I find something mutual to everyone, that many of the people who started to keep mitzvot, after a very short period of time, they already call themselves Baalei Tshuva. They ask, what are you? They say, I'm a Baal Tshuva. The problem is that most of the people don't understand the term Baal Tshuva. We don't really understand what it means to do tshuva. And just because they keep 2-3 mitzvot, and they left 1,000 out, they already consider themselves Baalei Tshuva. And this comes out of ignorance, or maybe a wishful thinking, or I don't know how to call it, but we have to understand, we have to put things in the right perspective, you know, what does it really mean to be frum, to be religious? What does it really mean? If we know what it means, we have a chance to maybe get there one day. If a person knows his destination, right? If a person knows his destination, then he has a chance one day to get there. If he doesn't know his destination, how would he get there? There's no chance to get there if you don't know where you're going to, right? First, you have to know your destination. Then you can work on your direction, how to get there in the best way, in the fastest way that's possible. So first of all, let's talk about men for a few minutes. Then we go to ladies. A man, in order for him to really become a Baal Tshuva, to really become religious, according to Judaism, to the Torah, to requirements, to Shulchan Aruch, to the Book of Law, he has to first set right away daily time to learn Torah, every day. If he doesn't learn Torah every day, just start to keep some mitzvot that he hear here and there in a tape, or from Shabbos in a shul, or his friend told him, or he hears over here, or he saw a show. So he puts a little bit that he knows and he thinks I'm religious because I don't drive on Shabbat and don't smoke and I don't cook on Shabbat. I don't use the elevator. So I go to shul, you know, I do kiddush. I'm religious already. I put tzitzit. That's it. Baloney. Now, he's not religious. He's starting to practice a little bit Judaism, but he's still far away from what the requirements are. So rule number one, he has to set daily time to learn Torah. The Gemara explained that bitul Torah, limud Torah keneged kulam. The learning of the Torah, men is obligated to learn Torah. Women are not. But soon I'm going to prove to you that women are just as obligated as men in a minute. But in general, generally speaking, a man is obligated to learn Torah. And if he doesn't learn Torah, he violates the worst sin in the Torah. He's actually canceling one of his major obligations in life. If a person is not connected to Hashem every day, to learn minimum 1 hour a day, then he cannot call himself Baal Tshuva, he cannot progress, his progress will be very, very slow and not in the right direction. So there are two advantages by learning Torah. One is you become educated. So the more educated you are, the less mistake you make, the more positive things you do. That's one thing. The second thing is that the Torah, unlike any other learning, the quality of the Torah is that the Torah is a spiritual cleansing. It cleans the soul of a person. If you learn history for 50 years, it won't cleanse your soul. If you learn math, maybe it will make your brain sharp, but it won't make you a better human being. Anything you learn in life will make you knowledgeable in that field, but won't make you from a wicked person into a righteous person. But the power of a Torah, such as learning Gemara, even though, you know, sometimes the topic that you learn, sacrifices, purity, impurities, things that already passed from the world 2,000 years ago. It's nothing to do with our generation. It won't make you any more knowledgeable in everyday's obligation. But actual learning, even something that does not apply anymore today, it's already helping the soul. This is a sgula. This is something, it's a mystical thing. There's no way to explain it in words. It's a gift that God gave to us. It's a spiritual antibiotic. I like to call it like that. You have an antibiotic that fights against the infections and cleans them from the body. This is a spiritual antibiotic. So if you connect to Torah, then you automatically become more and more attracted to Hashem. Your emunah, your level of faith is going higher and higher. Your integrity, your honesty, your devotion, the laziness slowly disappeared. It's affecting you in every field in your life. Now, I said that man is obligated to learn Torah. That's the halakha. What about women? Are women obligated to learn Torah? The Torah of a man, no. But the Torah of a woman, yes. For instance, a woman is not obligated to learn Gemara. Not only she's not obligated, some say she's not allowed. Why she's not allowed? I have so many bright women that enjoy a page of Gemara and understand it even better than the men. So what's the problem if they learn? It's addictive. Once you get into it, can't live without it. And especially women which they are in higher spiritual level naturally than the men. There's no obstacle between a woman to Hashem like a man has. Because a woman can connect to Hashem very fast. And she's very automatically, her nature is very spiritual, much more than a man. So if she's going to start learning Gemara, maybe she'll leave her children to starve. Or she would neglect her other obligations in life, because it's like a drug. You get into it, it's very hard to stop. So therefore, they have to focus on what they have to know. How many things women have to know? How many years a woman has to learn in order for her to call herself Baalat Shuva? After how many years of learning, and I'm talking full day of learning, how many years a religious woman, today she decided to become religious? What should I do, Rabbi? Modesty, I understand. Shabbos, I understand. Kosher food, I understand. Charity, I understand. Reading Tehillim, I understand. Praying at least once a day, I understand. What else? Tell me what to do. What is the first thing that a woman has to do? Learn minimum 7 years, full day, to be able to be called Baalat Shuva. Why? You say 7 years? A doctor learns less than that. I have to be, in order for me to become Baalat Shuva, I have to learn 7 years full day? How can it be? So let's see. First thing a woman has to know is all the laws of impurity, nida. You know how complicated it is? To know all the terms, to know what when it's this, when it's that. It's not realistic, every little thing, to look for the rabbi for 5 hours until he's going to pick up the phone and tell you what you have to do, what you don't have to do. The general things you have to know. So that's one thing. Second thing, all the laws of kashrut. It's not so simple. Meat, dairy, got mixed by mistake, spicy, cutting onion, cutting garlic, cutting hot peppers. By mistake, you use the wrong knife. It's hundreds of things that can come every month in a kitchen alone. Worms, lettuce, broccoli, all these things. How to clean, what to clean, what happened if you forgot, you cooked already. So many things. Then the law of modesty. Well, what's allowed, what's not allowed, how to behave, how to talk, how not to talk, who you allowed to talk, what happens if a visitor come, a cousin of your things. So many things that happens all the time. You have to know that. The laws of Shabbat. Just the laws of Shabbat alone is minimum a year of learning. All the laws of Muktzeh. What you're allowed to talk, what you're not allowed to talk, what you do in Shabbat, all kinds of things. So many things to learn. What's not allowed, what's allowed, what's the Oraita, what's the Rabbanan. There's many things to learn, yes.
From my experience, most Baal Teshuva learn on the go.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. We're going to do questions afterwards. Thank you.
All right. So, yeah. So, I myself don't mind questions. Actually, no, I prefer actually questions. So, I'll answer your questions. I rather, like I say, I don't care if the lecture will be organized or not. I care that people have questions and I answer the questions. It's more important. So the word onego, it's not a realistic thing, because a person that has something that it's urgent, on the go may take him 10 years until he know what to do. What is he going to do in the next 10 years? Make violations every day? If a person has to know the laws of Shabbat, the faster the better. The slower it's taking him to learn the laws of Shabbat, that means he's violating more and more Shabbatot. You understand? Now, there's a difference between a secular person who grew up in a kibbutz or in Russia and never heard about Judaism and violated Shabbat 20 years until he found out, to a person who already knows Shabbat is a holy day and there's lots of laws required, and he takes his time until he's going to learn the laws. Because right now he understands Shabbat is a very serious thing, violation of Shabbat. So he knows that Shabbat is an urgent thing to know, but it takes 5 years until he agrees to learn. It's not realistic. So now we are actually making our situation worse than before. For we were like goyim, we don't know what we live for. Now we know Shabbat is a holy day and we take our time. There's no such thing on a go. On a go, of course, in life every day we progress. But a woman must learn. Now, a woman has to learn Musar. There's lots of Musar. The old Pirkei Avot. She has to know the Teilim, the meaning of the words of Teilim. You know, it can take months to learn the meanings. Not to American or Canadian women like you. Even to an Israeli that she's from birth. She went to Bet Yaakov. You ask her when she's 20, what's the meaning of all the words of Teilim? Most girls do not know. They don't know. They just read like a parrot. They read. It's like, hey, look, you know, these American kids that read in English, in Hebrew, but they don't understand one word of what they say. 20 years they pray, and not one time their heart move. Their heart is not actually participating in a prayer. Now, everybody understand, in order for me to get close to Hashem and to wake up my heart, I must understand what I'm talking to Him. If I just read Chinese and don't know what I'm saying, how is it going to wake up my heart? You understand? So better to pray in your language that you understand than to pray in Hebrew that you don't understand. That's the rule. And not only that, it's much better to pray in Hebrew because it's the holy language. So if you don't understand Hebrew in general, at least take your book, take a little sharp pencil and go over it. Today everything is ready. Today they have printed already. Hebrew, English, one next to. So at least when you come to a word you don't understand, you look what's the meaning of it, you think. I just read the word in Hebrew. I didn't know what it means, but now I read. Now, this is also for Israelis. I'm telling you, because this is ancient Hebrew. It's a divine language. Most of the words they don't understand. Take a professor in a university in Israel. Half of the words of Tehillim, he won't know what it means. You understand? Because it's all very hard language. It's 3,000 years old. So a person has to know. Now the prayer, the whole entire prayer that a woman prays at least once a day, she has to know what she's saying, what she's doing, all right? So obviously now comes the laws of a family and raising children. You know how much there is to learn to raise children, especially in this generation? You know how many books you have to read? There's tens of books to read and to know them fully, not just to read and forget after a week, because it's everyday scenarios. So you got the point, there's a lot to learn. And the Gemara say, Ena ma'aretz chassid. Someone who is ignorant can never be righteous, and definitely not chassid, which means extra righteous. Forget about extra righteous. Let's talk the minimal level. If you don't learn, you'll never get there. Just because you put a nice short wig or cover your hair and walk modest on the street, it's beautiful. You don't make millions of sins every day anymore, but you still have a lot more things to do. So now this is one thing. Now, many people really dream that they are religious. That's where the problem begins. They call themselves religious, but if you really follow what they do every day, it's 80% secular, 20% religious. So what does the Torah say? Everything in life goes by majority. By the majority. Here, there's two chairs right here. What does it mean, the majority? If a person is mostly something, if a person... 8 times a day give steal, and 2 times a day give tzedakah. So what is he? A bal tzedakah or a thief? How would you rate him? 8 times a day steal, 2 times a day give some tzedakah. Tzedakah he gives comes from what he steals. It's not his money. So really, technically, he's a thief. You understand? So a person that keeps some of the Shabbat, but he still smokes few cigarettes, can you call him Shomer Shabbos?
No.
He violates Shabbat less than an average person. You can say that. But it's still Mechalel Shabbat. If a person speaks Lashon Hara, 10% of what he used to when he was secular. Only 10%. 90% he clean. Can you say that he's clean with Lashon Hara? No, he's speaking Lashon Hara. Do you understand the idea? So the idea is when a person focuses on something, to become a Baal Tshuva, you have to clean it completely. Now the word Baal Tshuva, it's a very tricky word. Why it's a tricky word? Because every person is doing partial tshuva in his life in certain things. For instance, Shabbos. I wasn't Shomer Shabbos. Now I am. So I corrected things that called Shabbat. Shabbat I corrected. Does that mean that I corrected my prayers? Not necessarily. Maybe I'm still very bad with that. So I'm tshuva in tshuva for Shabbat, but not in davening. I'm tshuva in Shabbat, but not in learning Torah. I have tshuva on Shabbat, but not in the law of Nida, 100%. Or modesty. So it could be a partial tshuva, which of course is better than nothing. Don't get me wrong. It's not either all or nothing. The more you do, the better it is. Then your rating is higher and higher. 10, 11, 12, until you get to 100%, if it's possible. But the idea is, now everybody, I have to understand that just to think because I do five or six things as a woman and I already consider myself a Rebbetzin, let's think again if it's true or not. Okay, now I want to speak about, since you are all ladies here, I want to talk about things that are more unique for ladies. Who knows what's the most important mitzvah for a lady in this life? Most important for a Jewish lady. Not lighting candles. No, that's one of the last things on the list. What? Mikveh, what else? Who says? Yeah. Very good. Modesty. The mikveh that you say, it's true, but it falls into this category. It's all connected to modesty. Most important thing for women is modesty. Modesty. I want to ask a question. Keeping Shabbos, right? Keeping Shabbos. A person who doesn't keep Shabbat, according to Hashem, what do you call him? Mechalel Shabbos, right? Why do you call him Mechalel Shabbat? Because he makes Shabbat chol, weekday. Now, what's the name? What's according to Shulchan Aruch? According to Shulchan Aruch, who knows how does the book of law, the Jewish book of law, and the Gemara, and the Torah, from all places, how does God call a Mechalel Shabbat? According to God's opinion, to Hashem's opinion, how does he look at a Jew who is not keeping Shabbos? What is he compared to? A 100%, very good. A Jew that doesn't keep Shabbat, according to Hashem, is 100% like a goy. What does it mean, like a goy? He cannot be a goy because his mother is Jewish, so he has a Jewish soul. But he's like a goy. What does it mean, like a goy? Everything that applies to a goy applies to him. As a negative, not positive. Which means, let me give you an example. If we have a wine that we need to do a kiddush, and a goy shake the wine, can we do kiddush on that wine? Cannot do a kiddush. If he just touch it with his finger, no problem. But if he shake it, cannot do kiddush on this wine. If Itzik, the Israeli, Itzik Cohen, that drives on Shabbat, he moves the wine, we cannot do kiddush. Same thing, like a goy. If a goy wants a loan from me, I can charge him interest. If he wants to give me a loan, I can pay him interest. Itzik wants to take loan from me. If he's a Jewish person, the Torah says not allowed to charge interest one Jew from another. But in the book of Shulchan Aruch, it says that Mechalel Shabbat, is any way to keep the phone open? It ruins the entire recording.
No, I think that's for
just keep it open.
The door.
Yes.
What about an aliyah to the Torah?
Oh, wait, so I'll get to it. So the point is that if the Jew that is not Shomer Shabbat wants to take a loan from a Jew that is Shomer Shabbat, since he's considered 100% like a Goy, you can charge him interest. Even though it's one of the biggest punishments in the Torah, that if a Jew charges interest from another Jew, it doesn't resurrect on the resurrection of the dead. That's how bad it is. But since he's 100% like a Goy, you charge him interest is not a sin. Why don't we do it in that case? Maybe in the term of the loan, he's going to make tshuva and become religious, then you get stuck. Cannot charge him anymore, so it's too much of a risk. You know, if he becomes in a month or two from now, Shomer Shabbat, now you gave him a loan 5 years and you cannot charge him any more interest. So he gets stuck. So that's why we don't do it. But technically, if he wants a short-term loan and you charge him interest, it's 100% like a goy. It's not a violation. I'll give you another example. If he wants to get an aliyah to the shul, he comes on Shabbos to the shul. You have any napkins here or something? I'm very hot here. Thank you. So if he comes to the shul and he wants to get an aliyah, thank you, you're not allowed to give him aliyah. If Muhammad comes to the shul and wants to get an aliyah, say, I love Judaism. I help the Jews. I even donate money to the synagogue, rabbi, whatever you want. You want, I'll pay for the Sefer Torah, $50,000, I do. Just give me one time aliyah to go up, to say bracha, to bless God for the Torah. You're allowed to give Muhammad aliyah? Not allowed, right? But Itzik, our friend, also you're not allowed to give him aliyah. Same thing. Why? It's Mechalel Shabbat. You see, you understand? So, same thing woman. If a woman does this, also she's like a goya. Even though it's such a critical thing, it's the foundation of Judaism, Shabbat, it's still nothing compared to modesty. Think about it. Modesty for women is much, much, much more urgent and important than even Shabbat. How come? If you lose your Judaism, what modesty will do for you? So first of all, you have to know that the goyot, the non-Jewish female, have no permission to walk on the street the way they are. Even they are not allowed. One time we had a question of a Jewish woman that became modest, and she had many, many designer clothes, not modest, she has to get rid of. So she wanted to sell it to a goyot in her work or to give it as a gift. And the answer was not allowed, because Christine also not allowed to dress like this. Why? Everything that is no modesty, Hashem hates. Of course, when a Jewish woman does it, it's on a much higher level. But even Christine, when she walks not modest in the street, it makes Hashem very angry, because he doesn't like modesty issues. Where does it say it? V'ra'a b'cha erva davar v'shav me'achareha. Every problem with modesty makes Hashem go away from this place. Sodom and Gomorrah was not Jewish, Sodom v'Amora. None of them were Jewish, but they made all kinds of sins, modesty-related sins, and God destroyed them with fire from heaven. And we have many other examples in history that even when the goyim have all kinds of idol problems and modesty problem, it brings tragedies to them. If you look in the United States, the places who get hit the most with tragedies are places with lots of problems. South Carolina, Myrtle Beach, Miami, Los Angeles, earthquake, and San Francisco, the worst. And you know what's going on over there. Right? So those places that actually having problems with modesty are subject to more tragedies than other places, if you really pay attention to what's happening in the world. So now, why a woman that wants to become Baalat Tshuva, it's more urgent modesty than even Shabbos? Now, don't get me wrong, Shabbat is a must-do right away. You cannot wait even one time, one Shabbat. But why modesty is more critical? Why? Who knows the difference between the urgency of modesty compared to Shabbat?
Because it's related to
It's like to be God fearing, to be true.
Shabbat is also God fearing.
Modesty leads. Lack of modesty leads to all the other sins.
I wouldn't say so. I know not modest women that does a lot of other mitzvot. Keep Shabbos, they give tzedakah, they do a lot of good things, chesed, but they're not modest.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah. Exterior modesty as well as inner modesty, you're talking about both?
Everything, combined, yeah. Everything. Outside, inside, behaving, talking, everything that relates to it. No? Why it's so critical? But Shabbat is also changing the holiness. Person, the Gemara say, a person is not keeping Shabbat, he kick Hashem away from his neshama. His neshama can die from it. So he's excluding himself from Judaism. So.
Was men sin all the time?
Oh.
What?
Oh.
All the Jewish people.
Okay, good. So there is two categories. There's category of a sinner, which we all make sins, but that's between me and my Creator. One day I have to deal with it, me and him, one on one. And there is a sin that affecting the public. It's called chote umachti. It's a much bigger sin when I gather 3,000 people to commit the sin with me together. Which means if I was only sinning in my house myself, I have my problems. It's me and him. But if I gather now 3,000 people to do the same sin, I convince them to participate in a sin with me. I wanted to eat pork, so I'm eating for myself. Or I invite 3,000 people to my place and feed everyone pork. Which one is worse, when I eat by myself or when I give it to 3,000 other people with me? There's nothing to compare, no? Now, a woman that walks in the street and she's not modest, how many men in an average day look at her? Could be 100, can be 1,000. Those who go to the beach can be 1,000,000 a day. Depend where you are. So the more busy is the area, the more problems you gain. But it's get even worse. What happens if it's an actress? She's in a movie and 50 million people saw her not modest on a screen. She has to pay for each one of them separately for the punishment. Whatever he gets. And she gets for him, and for him, and for him, and for him, and for everyone. So it could be every movie of these Hollywood actresses, especially if they're Jewish, she has endless amount of punishment. Endless. There's no words to describe when it's ever going to end. Everyone jealous with these actresses. Oh, I wish I was. I wish. Career, money, millions, $20 million a movie. You gotta cry for them. They are the most miserable people on earth. For every movie and all the fame and the glory that she gained, millions of years she's gonna have to suffer. And it's not an exaggeration. For every movie, millions of years, especially if she's Jewish. And some of these actresses are Jewish. Why is it? It's called Machti'ei Arabim. What does the Gemara say about someone who committed the public to make sins? It's called Chote Umachti, Machti Arabim, En Maspikim Beyado Lasot Tshuva. En Maspikim Beyado Lasot Tshuva. Now the language is not a regular Hebrew. It should have been, Lo Yaspik Lasot Tshuva. It should have been, will die without Tshuva. It should have been, will be very difficult for him to do tshuva. What does it mean? En maspikin beyado. It's not enough in his hands to do tshuva. What's this expression? The answer is, one day he decides to become religious. So he begins to keep mitzvot. He pray in the morning, one mitzvah. Made a bracha, two mitzvot. Put tzitzit, another mitzvah. Put filin shel hayad, 4 mitzvot. Sheled, 5 mitzvot. Give $2 in the box, 6 mitzvot. Count, 200 a day. No, let's be generous. Now he keeps mitzvot 20 years. 200, 300, 400, 700, 1,000, 5,000, 20,000. One day she was walking on the street and 1,000 men looked at her when she wasn't modest. It's already millions of sins. The amount of mitzvot that she's going to do now, putting it on a scale, will not be maspikin beyada lasot tshuva, to turn everything to the positive. En maspikin beyado, ki umachti arabim. If it was only him, so it's now one for one. I violate Shabbat, now I keep Shabbat. One against the other. No, if you live more years religious than less, then there's a chance that you turn it to the positive. But if you influence thousands every day, and now you one against thousands, how are you going to do it? So what's the solution? All of you ladies, and some here, Baalei Tshuva, and you used to be not modest, and now you are, or not, depend. Some religious people think they're modest, but they're very not modest. Even though they wear skirts, and or maybe even jackets, but they have all kinds of material, T-shirts, lycra that attach to the body, all kinds of writing, all kinds of things that is against the Shulchan Aruch, against the halacha, and they not even know. So she thinks she's religious for many, many years. For instance, those who put wig. The wig was not supposed to make you prettier than before. Your wig made you prettier than what you used to be. No, so where is the modesty? The opposite, you attract more attention. It's true, you cover your hair. That's one obligation, to cover a married woman's hair. No matter how, to cover. First, to cover. But now you're increasing the modesty problem even more than before. So what did you gain? You made $5 and you lose 10 every day? Yes, you gain 5 by doing something positive. And then you lose 10. So what's the point? The point is to make the 5, not to lose 10. To make the 5 pure, not to lose. Yes.
What you're saying doesn't make sense to me. So
tell me what's not making sense.
Because you can be an ugly woman and you wouldn't be committing a sin. Like if you're walking on the street, not dressed modestly, then people aren't looking in that direction. The same hand you don't take any onus on the male, his responsibility. And the third point is, I'm thinking about Lahavdil, the Muslims with the burqas, and they're dressed modestly. And so, Judaism doesn't take that approach that we have to be dressed in a tent.
First of all, I have news for you. All the original Jewish women from 2,000 years ago used to dress just like the Arabs do, cover, but without covering the face. Because according to Judaism, a woman not allowed to cover her face. Nobody is supposed to cover his face. Now, I didn't say a wig is not allowed. It's allowed. Some rabbi is allowing it. So once it's a questionable issue, some G'dolei Torah allow it, who am I to contradict them? Yeah. But everyone agree that there is a limit. Even those who allow it, you're not going to find one posek, even in the Ashkenazi world, that allow the wigs that women wear today. None of them. Almost none of them is kosher. If you don't believe me, go ask. Find anyone, Rav Eliashiv, Rav Kanievsky, all the G'dolei Ador. If one of them disagree with me, I erase this lecture from my website immediately. None of them agree to it. If you don't believe me, I'll show you letters. They say the wig has to be modest, very short, not too much color, curls, all these things. That wasn't made to attract more attention to a married woman. You know, we had a situation today that single guys coming to speak to married women in weddings or sending someone thinking she's single because they're not even dreaming that this is a wig. So the idea is that we defeat the purpose. If we are honest with ourselves, even though it hurts, I know it hurts, it's a sensitive issue, but let's be honest. Everyone has his weaknesses. What's the weaknesses of the ladies in this generation? Modesty. The difference is that there's two kinds of women. There's honest and the women that are lying to themselves. They live in a lie, in denial.
I think that you can't be so black and white. You understand? I find that you cannot degrade women. You can't say they're either evil or good.
I didn't say evil. I didn't use this word.
But, you know, it's a little harsh.
I know, the truth hurts.
No, it is not the truth that hurts. It is condensate. When a person is what's that word?
Putting down.
Putting down that.
No, first of all, no.
In the case of a little girl who got brutally murdered,
yes,
by this couple.
Destroyed.
No, here in Toronto, okay. Right? This little Tentori Stafford,
right,
whatever it is.
Right.
What, she's not dressed modestly and some
right.
Psychopath. And this woman go and kill her?
I didn't justify this or anything like that. And even the person who spit on that woman in Israel, whatever it is, that's very foolish. Because in order for a person to, if a person, the only one who can judge someone is a Beit Din. And I, to the best of my knowledge, I don't remember in this generation any woman brought to Beit Din because she dressed not modest on the street. So individual like me or any other Jew don't have the right to judge a woman and call her and tell her what she does right or wrong. We're speaking now, generally speaking, you are, with all due respect, you're not the only women in the world. This lecture will go to tens of thousands of women in the world. And those of them who wants to change according to God's requirement will do. And those who wants to do whatever they want to do, they'll do anyway, with or without me. I'm not going to change the world. But if I change 1% of the women in the Jewish world to be a little bit more modest, very good. Those who don't want to hear, they can get upset. I'm not afraid of people who get upset in my lecture. It's actually a good sign. It's a sign that the truth hurts. And don't think that I'm talking to you. I'm talking to myself. Half of the things that I speak every night in my lectures all over the world, I speak mainly to myself. I didn't come to speak as a perfect human being, and now all of you are below me, so I have to now give you Musar. No.
Because you don't wear a wig.
No.
And suffer from migraines.
I'm not, listen, we are ladies here. There's many ladies here. We're talking ladies' issue. If it was men and ladies, we talk general things. It's better to talk to things that is important to you, because every lady wants to be as perfect as possible. I'm sure every person, Jews or non-Jews, if they believe in God and they know he's watching them, as the Torah said, there's an eye who watch you and an ear who listens to you, and everything you do is recorded in a book of God. So every woman who wants to be religious, that means she has a good neshama. She cares about being righteous. However, not all the paths are kosher. There are ways that there's kosher ways to come close to Hashem, and there are ways that are not so kosher. Our job is to come close to Hashem in a right way, not in a wrong way. There's 80,000 religions and cults. They all search for the creator of the world. They all search for the truth. Chinese, Arabs, Christians, everyone is trying to search for this God and to be righteous in their way. The problem is that they have 80,000 fake religions and cults who were made by people like us, and it's full of mistakes and contradictions.
We have enough problems within our own Jewish nation.
I know.
If you're trying to mikarev our fellow Jews, right? Tzniut is something the Muslims have, the Christians have, the Buddhists have. They all have that in their... So why would you feel so Jewish if you're starting to dress?
First of all, I said 5 minutes ago, if you remember, that it's something that applies to Goyim as well. And God is upset even when a non-Jewish woman is not modest. I just also said that everything that a Jew does in this world, for good or for bad, is much bigger than what the Goy does. The Goy has reward and punishment, he has heaven, he has everything, but in a limited level, because their test is much easier. And we have a much harder test, and everything a Jew does for good or for bad is judged much more severely. So depend. If you do positive, it was very good to be a Jew. If you do more negative, it would be better off to be a Goy. Better to be a righteous Goy and have heaven, and or to be a wicked Jew who lost your share to the world to come. As the Gemara say, those are the Jews who lost, God forbid, lost their shares to the world to come. Can it be a worse thing than this? If Ahmed will go to heaven, because he wasn't a murderer, he wasn't a thief, he believed in a court system, he didn't eat raw animal, he believed in one God, he respected that God, and he did not do any sex crimes with his 7 relatives, then he's a righteous Gentile. He goes to heaven, and you know how many Jews do not go because they do all kinds of sins, that they lost their share to the world to come? And the Gemara is full of examples in Masechet Sanhedrin. So, if a person knows that he's going to fail the test, I always tell all the goyim that come to beg me to convert, I say to them, let's think rationally. Look at the Jews. Most of them in the world, is very difficult to them to live according to the Torah. They don't even want to try when they see the mission is not so simple. So it's much harder, so they give up. You want to be a Jew. What makes you think you succeed? You may now do 20% and 80% you do wrong, now you're liable. Stay what you are, stay righteous, do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, be a generally a good person, and you have heaven in a limited way, but you not subject yourself to such a risk. Some of them convinced that that's the right thing to do. And some of them the opposite. Once you tell them that, they say, no, no, I gotta do it 100% the best way. And they convert, and some of them become very, very orthodox, strict Jews, and some, after a while, it's very difficult for them. And maybe in their heart they regret that they did it. But it depends on who you are. So let's go back to what we say. The general rule is that everything that a married woman does and attracts attention from another man, it's obviously a sin. Because a married woman has to belong to her husband. If the Gemara said, or the Zohar, that if somebody else enjoys from the beauty of a married woman, is taking away from her husband parnasa. What's the connection? Parnasa means a living, to make a living. Why the husband has to lose money because his wife decided to go not 100% modest on the street? The answer is that, you know, in a spiritual world, you have like trees with roots and branches. And there's a branch that the women and the money is from the same branch, according to Kabbalah. So automatically, since they are coming from the same branch, the parnasa of the house is more determined based on the woman than the husband after they get married. So once you get married, the wife brings the blessing or, God forbid, the curse to the house, depending what she does. Also the children. The children be Talmidei Chachamim or not, depend on their modesty. What's the connection? Many things we find in the Gemara that it's subject to how the woman behaves. So the more modest she is, the more rewards she already gets, her and her family, in this life, not to talk about the afterlife. Especially if she lives in a hot place like Miami. You come out of the house, you make 5 steps to the car, you're all dripping sweat. Now you have to dress, jacket, cover the hair, you know, it's very difficult. Rather, you live in a very freezing weather, it's much easier to be modest. But everything is judged according to the suffering. The more suffering, the more reward you get. So therefore, whenever we suffer doing a mitzvah, we should really be happy and lucky. We have to understand that I'm making 100 times more now. It's taking the same hour, one hour of walking modest in the street, it's actually like 100 in a different place. Or 1 hour learning Torah in a very difficult condition when you have mortgage to pay and the baby is sick and the wife is this and they don't have what to, you know, who knows what. And the pressure and the heat and who knows and the, so many things that connects to make it so much harder. The harder it is, the greater the reward is. So overall, when a person sees the amount of suffering he had, he will come to the conclusion that it is actually the best thing that happened to him in his life. But I was just trying to make a very important point clear to every one of us. It's not only women. This man also can be Machti Arabin, could be a DJ in a disco club. And he play music and guys and girls dance and he gives them drugs or whatever, like they do in some of the clubs here. And somebody like that is also considered Machti Arabim. Or a person who make an internet website, that speaks against the Torah or against God. That's called Machti Arabim. So Machti Arabim, making the public committing sins, is not only by ladies, but by ladies is every minute of her life. Because everywhere she go, not modest, there are people. That's already a problem. But there's another problem now. What's the other problem? The other problem is that it's called Chilul Hashem. Every sin, you can break it to 2 categories. A sin that we do in public is the actual sin or the actual mitzvah, the reward of the mitzvah or the punishment of the sin. That's particularly for what sin or what mitzvah that you do. However, there is something else. It's called Chilul Hashem. Chilul Hashem. Let me give you an example. Let's say a man, a young man with a yarmulke, was caught in the street or by a camera kissing a girl. He kissed her on her cheek. Could be, I don't know, his cousin. It wasn't really a love kiss. It was more like hello or goodbye. But they caught it on camera and now they show it on television and 1 million people saw it. The actual kiss, it's a small sin, especially when there was no intimacy. It was just cousin to cousin or cousin to an uncle, whatever. But the effect that it made in the world, that they see someone with a yarmulke kissing a girl in the street or something and they show it all over, the Chilul Hashem is 1 million times worse than the actual kiss. Sometimes we do a small sin, but we do it in the wrong place, and the effect that it makes and the damage that it causes to religion, to the nation of God, is horrible. So the actual Chilul Hashem is much worse than the actual sin. That's why the Gemara say, if a man wanted to make a sin with a woman, and he already made up his mind, nobody can stop him. That's it, I gotta make the sin, leave me alone, religion, not religion, forget about it. So the Gemara say, wear black clothes, which means put a custom, and go to a faraway town and make the scene over there, not in a place where people know you. What's the difference? This is a woman here and this is a woman there. It's the same scene. To prevent the Chilul Hashem, which is even worse than the actual sin. The Chilul Hashem is disgracing the name of Hashem in public. It's much worse than any sin you can think of. Why? Because every sin you can make tshuva and you can correct it. Some sins require suffering, such as Yisure Karet, Chilul Shabbos, the Torah says, V'nichreta ha-nefesh ha'im Yisrael. God says, 36 times in the Torah, 36 restriction, I'm cutting that soul out of my nation, God forbid. Every time the punishment in the Torah, it's Karet, to correct it, it's require also suffering, to regret, to be ashamed, never to repeat the sin, to make confession every day, Yom Kippur, and also suffering, X amount of suffering, eventually erase all the Yisurei Karet. But Chilul Hashem, even the suffering does not correct. It's a category by itself that a person regrets. He's ashamed that he did Chilul Hashem. He never repeats the sin. He's ashamed. He makes confession every day. He fasts 50 Yom Kippur already. The sin was when he was 18, now he's 70 almost. And it's still not erased. When is it going to be erased, the Gemara say? Only in the time of death. So Chilul Hashem, we find that it's a horrible category, worse than anything else. Walking in the street, not modest for a Jewish girl, especially when you have Christians and Arabs that walking modest around you, that's the biggest Chilul Hashem. So it's not only your integrity and what men thinks about you as a woman or how many men you make sins. That's one problem, Machti Arabim. It's embarrassing Hashem that his daughters walks like this in the street and that's how they behave in public. One time a man told me, I told him, spoke about modesty, and I said to him, I spoke about men who let their wife go with bikini on a beach. So how can it be that a man, it doesn't bother him that 1,000 men passed in the last hour and look at their own wife, the mother of their children, and had dirty thoughts about them, and he doesn't kill that man. What's not normal? Something is not normal about him. If he only read the mind of all these people who walks there on the beach, he would kill himself from the embarrassment. So what? He cannot imagine what this man thinking by looking at her on the beach? What's wrong with him? So he said to me, oh, my wife goes like this, but everyone goes like this. This is the way it is. So I asked him, tell me if your wife would make you a birthday party. And she invite 300 men to the house, 300 people to the house. And then she come to serve the cake with a bikini in the living room. What would you say? So, are you crazy? I throw her from the window. That's his words. Throw her from the window. I say, oh yeah? What's the difference? If it's here or it's across the street on the beach, there's a difference?
There is a difference.
What
I'll
is
tell
it?
You the difference. Because on the beach, everybody's dressed like that, so you don't necessarily stand out. In your house, if you walked in a bikini, you would attract so much attention, you know, it would not be the same.
Let me ask you a question. When everyone drives 120 kilometers an hour in a place that they allowed 90, mm-hmm. and there is 5,000 cars an hour do it, mm-hmm. and the policemen pull one person over, can he use it as an excuse that everyone does it? The policemen still give him the same punishment, and sometimes when you tell him everyone does it, he'll double your punishment for the chutzpah.
You can say you're driving the speed of traffic.
That's
my
right.
Husband's
there is a
lawyer.
That is like
the,
yeah.
No, you can't.
Yes, you
can.
Can.
I got a ticket.
Yeah, but you can.
Yes.
No, I said exactly that.
Like that.
I'm going with the floor. I said too bad for you because you got caught.
Okay, you. No. But guess what? There
you
is
can,
a law.
If you
there's a law.
Okay. All right. It's not important. The traffic. Okay. Go ahead.
When a woman goes in a bikini, she makes men look. It's a bigger error. What if the woman is like 200 pounds overweight? So men don't really.
No difference.
Is that still the same?
You see, you're making a very logical point.
Got it.
You're making a very logical point. But if the Torah would say that only pretty women has to be modest, and the ugly are not supposed to be modest, then I would be able to tell you, you're right. But then we would have to argue what's considered pretty, what's considered ugly. Because sometimes you find that many people think that one person is ugly, but there will be 5% who thinks that they're actually handsome. Or a matter of weight, even weight. There are some men who likes heavyweight, some like this, so it's really hard to know. But the Torah, we are not God. We are not God. We cannot interfere with his decision. In the Torah, there's no separation between handsome, pretty, ugly. There's no difference. Every woman must be modest. Yes.
I have a personal problem with dressmaking. And most of my customers are prune ladies. But sometimes they bring some clothes. They want to make it much shorter, very tight, and I'm trying to convince them it's not the modest. What should I do?
You're not allowed to do it for them. If you make them the dress shorter than what the halacha requires and they're Jewish, you are participating in their sin. It's called Mesayea Ledvar Avera. And also, Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol. So if they will do it somewhere else, so you're not Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol, but you still Mesayea Ledvar Avera. What is it like? It's like Muhammad who drives Said to blow himself in a mall. Muhammad doesn't want a murder. He's only a taxi driver. Someone gives him $100 to drive him to Tel Aviv because he has Israeli citizenship. So when Muhammad gets caught, the camera caught his cab, so they call him to court. He said, what do you want from me? I'm only a taxi driver. You know how many times I drove someone to Tel Aviv? What does it have to do that I drove the suicide bomber into the mall? I didn't participate in making the bomb or putting the bomb. He gets 20 years in prison. Why? Because you drove a suicide bomber to his place. But his claim is, with or without me, I'll get there. I'll take somebody else. But no court in the world will let him go because of this logical answer. He gives a logical answer, but nobody accepts this logic because you, after all, participated in a crime. And that's a problem. Yes?
It's not too esoteric. Can you explain a little bit more the connection between the parnasa and modesty of a woman, like how those roots
branches. That's mystical, Kabbalistic terms.
Is there any way you can imagine?
Sometimes in Kabbalah you find logic, in human logic. Sometimes it's above our logic. I give you an example. If a person walks under a camel, he goes under his stomach, because camel is very tall. So, you know, they used to do it when they clean them. So it makes him forget. It's affecting his memory. What's the connection? We will never know. If a person goes under a bridge when there was a lake, but the lake is dry, so he walks, he crosses under the bridge instead of going above the bridge. Now there's no water, so he goes under the bridge. Shortcut. It's affecting his memory. Person eat olives. It's affecting his memory. Why not onion? We don't know. This is all divine, mystical things. One thing we do know, that the Kabbalistic explained that the woman and Parnassah comes from the same root, from the same branch. Therefore, there is some kind of direct connection between them. And they are the foundation of the house. So if she is breaking the rules, it's affecting the living, the blessing of the house. That's the only logic I can give you. More than that, I can't, because it's above our understanding. Any more questions so far before I move on? Yes.
I understand that the human
It's hard for me to hear you, I'm sorry.
Women and community, I understand, is a synonym to abundance.
Anybody?
Women in the community are a synonym
to abundance.
To abundance.
It's the same femininity.
Women?
Nashim, Shem Nirdav, Shel Shefa.
Ken. Ah.
That's the reason why.
You're giving the answer. I was looking for the question. Okay,
I see.
No.
We believe.
Yes.
Do we believe that to approach the divine, we should be generous, selfless, pure, dedicated?
We don't believe, we know. We know that it has, one of the ways to do it is what you mentioned.
Yeah, we know, but we forget very often. I tell you, my humble opinion is we live in a time in which we are overwhelmed and poisoned by information.
Right.
Not too much.
Right.
Our mind is working too much, we have too much input. And we speak wonderfully, and we learn and know a lot, and the machine is yet to come. And the world looks terrible. Each time it looks worse. And all our knowledge does not advance us, not a millimeter. On the contrary, it's burying us. And it's making us sick. And this is the point.
The proof that you're right.
How can we, after we spoke before about the Muslim and all the other cultures, how can we advance the point of being sincere, being genuine, being good to each other, being human, being finally coming to the conclusion that the main thing is to be human, maybe to know a little less and to be a little more?
First of all, it's very difficult in the world that we live in, like you say, with internet and Facebook and all these things that are existing out there. So the massive amount of information and things and temptations are very, very big. It's true. So the test is much harder. But at the same time, you forget that all this technology helps us to learn a lot of Torah, to communicate, do chesed, to save souls, to make more Jews religious, to publish Torah on the internet. You know how many Jews would never come to a synagogue to hear a rabbi speak, became religious just from my website? And they don't even have a synagogue in their area. They just listened to the lectures on the website and they became fully Orthodox, just from the internet. So without the internet, these Jews would die completely secular. So everything that God gave us has two sides. Everything, positive and negative. It used to be small negative, small positive. Now it's big negative, big positive, but it's always equal. Same internet can destroy a soul, it can also save a soul very fast. Can destroy the soul in one day, can save a soul in one day. Facebook can destroy 1,000, can save 1,000. Depend what you choose to do with that. The choices are still the same, but the outcome is much, much faster and much bigger. The proof that you are right is Yemen. Yemen is a special country.
What?
Yemen, the Yemenite Jews. Yemen. So Yemen, I tell you what's the interesting part about it. Yemen was always and still a very primitive country. Very primitive. It's not advanced at all. So since the Jews went to Yemen more than 2,500 years ago, until this moment, there's still a few hundred Jews live there. Never in the history of Yemen, there was one Jew even, one.
What?
There was never in the history of Yemen, even one Jew who was Mechalel Shabbos. Never, until today. Not even one, ever. Never. One even, not one. You can add all together over the generations, probably more than a million Jews live there. Not even one of them was Mechalel Shabbat. And the women, not one time you saw a woman who dressed provocatively on the street and walk in the street. Well, it's a Muslim country, so it's not as easy to do it. But in general, since they were not advanced and they are not having what we have around us in civilized societies, they have much, much less temptations. I give you an example. When we buy an etrog for Sukkot...
I would like to say something.
Wait, one second. So when we buy an etrog for Sukkot, the only one that we know 100% is an etrog is the Yemenite etrog. Every other one is a doubt. Maybe yes, maybe not. Maybe they mix it with lemon. Why the farmers mix it with lemon? Because it's much easier to grow. You have much more quantity, and the quality is much better and much more beautiful, and they make thousands of dollars extra on every tree, thanks to the mixing of the seeds. You know, genetically, they mix. But in Yemen, they're so primitive, in Yemen, the farmers, they don't even know how to do it. So the only place we know it's still originally an etrog is Yemen. Every other country, they already have the technology to mix the seeds. So we cannot rely on them 100%. Still go by certainty. But Yemen, we know, they still did not know how to do it, which is very interesting. That's just to show you. So actually, the conclusion from this is that the more advanced we are, the bigger the danger to our Yiddishkeit is. Our spirituality is damaged tremendously by our big eyes, by what we want to have. The more fancy we want to live, the higher the risk is to forget Hashem. But that's nothing new. The Torah already warned about it. The Torah say, Shamanta avita kasita, become heavy and growing and wealthy, and you forget your God. Or what does it say? It says, gold and silver and horses and everything you have will multiply, and you become very wealthy, and then you become stuck up, you become proud, and then you will forget your God. Be very careful not to forget who gave you everything you have. So there's a warning in the Torah, same warning that applies today, apply then. But today, the fleshy lifestyle is the biggest it's ever been. Everybody understands that what the world has to offer today is a much, much more dangerous than what 100 years ago. You have to remember, 100 years ago, the wealthiest person that needed to go to the bathroom had to go to the field. 2 o'clock at night, no toilet paper, no light, no marble, no $100,000 bathroom. How did they have to live? How people live? How are the houses like today? Air condition, all these things that we have, fancy cars, jewelry like today. There was different lifestyle. Even the wealthiest people. If you take a wealthy person from 100 years ago and compare him to an average person today, the average person today has a much bigger life, much better life than a wealthy person from 100 years ago, even though he had servants. Because even to get water to take a shower, it was a 2-hour job to go to the lake, to bring buckets of water, to fill up the bath, to put pieces of wood, to heat the water. Forget about it. It was a nightmare. People took a shower once a week if they could afford it. Most people didn't take showers. Imagine how life was. Today we take it for granted. Many of the poor people come complain to me that they won't have meat on Passover. And I'm thinking to myself, meat in the old days, to make meat, to do it, there's no refrigerator. You have to make sure there's enough people to finish it. Everything today, people just take for granted. I just want to finish one thing I started with. I don't want to leave it open because time running out. So the point that I made before, and I want to conclude that, there are laws of modesty. Nobody can predict it, not Sfaradim, not Ashkenazim, not Hasidim. Yeah, there's some differences on certain custom, it's true, but the halacha, what's considered modest and what's not considered modest is one, unanimously. No rabbis in the world disagree with what modesty is. This is one of the things that everyone agree. What are the modesty laws? Let's go briefly over it. First, the skirts cannot be attached to the body at any given moment. It has to be wider than the actual size of a woman. When a woman sits, the skirt must cover her knees all the way to the bottom fully, which means sometimes when she stands, the skirt is covering the knees, but as soon as she sits, it goes above the knees. That's a violation of the halacha. Women cannot wear any top shirt, such as t-shirts or any of this stretch material that sticks to the body. It's a horrible sin. It's actually worse than wearing other things that she thinks is not modest. And they cannot have any writing on the front of their shirts. Cannot have any opening in the back. Cannot have any opening in the front. It has to be all the way to the beginning of the neck, fully closed. Her sleeves, when she folds her hands, has to be below the elbows. If it's 1 centimeter above the elbow, she's not a modest woman. You know, the difference between doing it right or wrong can be 1 millimeter. You already do it right. You don't do it, you don't do it. You have a violation. Yes, of course, it's not as bad as someone walking naked on the street. We understand the difference. But if you do it right. When it comes to the wigs, some Gdolea generation, the majority of the rabbis throughout the generation do not allow any wigs. Some of them say horrible things about women who wear wigs. I don't want to repeat it. However, there is other Gdolei Torah. They are the minority, but still there's big rabbanim that say wigs are allowed. But everyone agree. I'm just telling you the halacha. I'm not telling you what to do. Moshe Feinstein. Yeah, I know. There is some, I said, there are Gdolei Torah. You know what you remind me? I tell you what you remind me. Every time I go to speak to the young guys, I speak to them about cigarettes. So it's always the same. The ones who do not smoke always agree with me, support what I say. The one who smoke, right away, they get nasty. What? What are you talking about? This, that.
This is absolute. You smoke, you don't smoke. We all, in this room, everybody's dressed.
No,
right?
No,
but it's absolute.
I'm just giving an example of how a person is not objective. How we are not objective. Not only you here, every person in the world, when you speak about his weaknesses, you know, I tell you, you know what's the difference between a great person to not such a great person? The righteous people, the great people, they're always busy hiding their skills. They're not such a righteous people, they're always busy hiding their weaknesses. That's the difference between a righteous person that has a lot to offer and make himself humble. Oh, who am I? I'm nothing. Don't learn from me. I'm not an example. And the people, it's called in the Gemara, Istera Belagina Kish Kish Karia. One penny in a box makes a lot of noise. But when the box is full of $100 bills, doesn't make any noise. Or even full of quarters, doesn't make noise because it's stuffed. Wait. So what I'm saying to you is like this. Try not to think about yourself when I talk. I'm not referring to anyone particularly. I don't know what you do in your life. I don't know how modest you are. Just because you're modest now doesn't mean you're modest when you go tomorrow to a wedding or something. So I really don't know. It's nothing personal. I'm just telling you what the Torah and Shulchan Aruch says. Now, I started to say, some rabbis, like you mentioned, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and some others, are allowing a wig. But everyone, I repeat,
don't allow.
I know. Yeah, well, we don't need to go to names. Once I say the majority of the Chachamim against it, and the minority are for it. So I said, if you finally go with a rabbi that allows it, if you finally go according to rabbis who allows it, be honest and go according to him 100%, not only with what's good for you.
There isn't a minority opinion that says women don't even have to cover their hair.
There's not such an opinion. Find me one rabbi in the world that says it today.
There was in Europe when women were persecuted for covering their hair. The rabbis allowed it.
Well, if it's a life risk, could be. If it's pikuach nefesh, yeah. But today in the world, you find one posek, I give you a big prize. One rabbi in the world, Orthodox rabbi, doesn't have to be even big. A local rabbi that allowed not to cover the head, you get a prize for me.
Maybe if it makes her
rabbi. Okay, now, wait. Let me finish what I just said. Okay, so just what I'm saying to you is like this. If you finally go according to one rabbi that allows a wig, make it a kosher wig. Don't make it a fancy schmancy color, curls, this, all the way to here. Do it according to this rabbi. He's your rabbi. You go according to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. You go according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. So go with the wigs that their wives were wearing. Very short, modest, fine. But today, 5,000, 10,000 curls every day. She wishes she has five. She's really not trying to be modest. She's trying to fool herself. Let's be honest. Why to resist and to argue? The truth, it's the truth. You want to do it modest. That's all. I'm not saying don't do it.
What's modest to one is the modest to another.
No, but it's not. You see, this way of speaking, my issue is that in Eretz Israel, there's so many problems between Jews themselves with this condescending. It's not don't be modest. It's none of those things. Each person, when you teach something, of course, who doesn't want to be better? However, when it causes this kind of fighting where this little girl has major anxiety and walk down the street.
No, but on that we agree. We agree on that.
It's the problem. It's not about you are this way and in such a judgmental way. I have an issue with this way of teaching that is judgmental because there is a way to teach things to go in.
But you forget one very important, you forget one thing. The Torah is very judgmental. The Torah.
But and it's also the opposite because only because of Moshe Rabbeinu was the whole Jewish nation saved.
No,
right?
But the point is, look, if God didn't want us to know all the punishments and all the warnings in the Torah, he would not put it in his book. The Torah applies to every generation, even to our generation.
I just think we have to take it with a grain of salt.
I think that because we're in Canada, whatever, there's so I feel maybe they think you're not politically correct enough. I think we just have to be a little bit more understanding and understand what Rabbi Mizrahi, right, is trying to communicate to us. I think we're all big people. None of us here agree that any child should be damaged or hurt.
Right.
We're not going to go out with those kind of values having heard something like this. I feel like it's just not fair.
If you listen to my lecture, I condemned that myself.
I understand why some of these women are offended, I must tell you.
Yeah.
But I think we're all mature enough to try and just listen to the information. I don't think it's trying to attack anyone. And just
thank you very much.
Yeah, no, it's coming from.
Thank you very much.
In this community as well, where the men I have seen who when get this kind of way of teaching become very aggressive towards women, and I have personally seen that. I don't.
Wait,
you said something very nice when you spoke about the Yemenite. It happens so that I know them quite well. I lived among them in Jerusalem for a while. And it's a very interesting answer. This is what you say is completely right. It is so. The point is that the Yemenites, it comes from the inside out. They don't talk what you said about Shabbat and the women. They don't talk about how long the week should be.
Because they all cover for 100%. They cover.
Or how long they sleep, sorry. Because it comes from the inside out. They understand modesty as humility.
Right.
As knowing how to approach yourself, respect yourself,
right.
Not to exhibit yourself,
right.
Because you are not a merchant.
100%.
And not to exhibit yourself.
100%.
And what you said about the society, we live in a society that is in the fringes of reality. You know, everything is trivia and everything is superficial. And we Jews, without unknowingly, we go after that. So it would be of great help if you could, and you are doing it very well, a little stronger to help us to go to the inside.
I just want to conclude what I said before. So a woman that finally become Baala Tshuva and she decide to become modest, right? What is she going to do with the 20, 30, or 40 years before that she wasn't? How she has enough time to turn to the positive when she did billions of sins and thousands of people saw her and made sins because of her? How is she going to correct it? The answer is, same thing with Chilul Hashem. This is what I was trying to make clear to every one of us. Now we can do the opposite. Up to now we did Chilul Hashem, now we can do Kiddush Hashem, which means up to now you influence people for bad, now influence them for good, which means organize lecture, call people to come to lecture, give CDs to your friends, talk to people you come across to in a nice way, of course, in a polite way. Of course, you know, the example that we were using here, that some crazy lunatic attacking a girl or a woman or any woman, doesn't matter, she's not modest, it's not what the Torah said. The Torah doesn't allow it. The only one who could have done it is the Jewish Beit Din. If they feel that that's the right way to make a woman stop doing something, they have the permission to embarrass her, but nobody else can embarrass. Same thing, I cannot execute the Mechalel Shabbos, even though the Torah says Mechalel Shabbos has to be executed by the court, by the Jewish court, not by individual who takes a gun and kill him because it's Mechalel Shabbos. There is no permission. We are not the judges. The opposite. Sometimes a person that looks much worse than us in his visual way is better than us in Shamayim. Because remember, you grew up in Bnei Brak and he grew up in a kibbutz. The 20% that he does in religion is better than the 60% you do as far as difficulty. So to judge who is righteous and who is wicked, it's not in our hand. We do not know all the story. But to see something wrong about a Jew and to speak to him in a nice way, you know, this is, I saw, I heard, I was in a lecture, can I give you the CD? Maybe you will learn something. That's our obligation. The Torah says, every one of your brothers, every Jew around you, improve his way. Darkei Darkei Noam, in a pleasant way. Sometimes you do it very pleasant and they still get offended. Because not at you really, at their situation, so they take their anger on you. Don't be panicked. I said, if people get offended in a lecture, I know I did nothing wrong. I read to them what Hashem says. They get offended, then that's a good sign. There's a much bigger chance now in a month from now we see them doing the right thing, that when they leave the lecture with a smile, it was great, funny lectures, and everyone would stay with what they're doing. The idea of lectures is to encourage people. In case you're not convinced, the Chafetz Chaim is good enough for you. Yeah, the Chafetz Chaim, 100 years ago. So one time, the Chafetz Chaim made a convention to all the rabbis in Radin. He invited all the Ashkenazi rabbis from all over the area, and he made them a convention. What was the purpose of the convention? One lecture he gave. And this is what he says. He said, in previous generations, all the Jewish speakers were speaking about one topic. That's it. All the speakers, every lecture, every topic that they spoke about was all connected to one issue: heaven and hell. That's the words of the Chafetz Chaim. Today, this is 100 years ago, today the Chafetz Chaim says, the speakers went off this positive way and they started to talk differently. Not only they're not benefiting anyone, they're making a huge damage to the soul of the Jewish nation. Because people live comfortable and they think they are good and they are not about to change because they don't feel any conscious problems after the lecture. A good speaker, besides giving a lot of information, he has to encourage the people to think, I am not 100%. I have a lot to improve. When a person leaves the lecture with mixed feeling, on one hand, he's happy, he came, he learned Torah, and he gained some more knowledge, which is the positive side. But also he has to think, according to what I just heard, I am in a very serious critical condition. For instance, if the speaker spoke about stealing, and he knows he's a thief, so he has to think, according to what I just heard, I must wake up. If he didn't leave the lecture with such feeling, the lecture get a zero mark for his entire lecture. Because anyway, no one remembered the information after a week. The only thing people remember from lectures is, what do I have to wake up about? Modesty, I have to improve. My wig is not 100%, let me work on it. My kashrut is not 100%, let me work on it. My marriage is not 100%, let me wake up. My Shabbat is not 100%, let me wake up, then you know you achieved something. If everyone loves you in a lecture, then you're not a good speaker. If everyone hates you, you're also not a speaker. If it's some and some, that means you're a very good speaker. Which means the people who are really searching for the truth receive the information, unless if you're full of ego and pride and you're putting people down. I've seen in my eyes speakers, they go like this. What's with you? You're doing this? How come? You know what you're doing is this and this. What's with you? What's with you? Of course, that's not the right way. Speaking generally, not attacking anyone personally, speaking the knowledge of the Torah in general, everyone who wants to grab, grab. You don't want to take, don't take. No one put a gun to your head. One last question for today. No? Yes.
I will open another question. So, you know, here is many, many women married and not married.
Yes.
Now, to the family, women for sure bring huge brocha in Shabbos. Shabbos, how women can bring brocha for themselves?
First of all, what could be a bigger blessing to a woman when her husband and her children are progressing and there's more parnasa in the house? So that's already the best blessing for a woman. You ask a woman, what do you want? You want personally to have blessing or you want your children to be blessed? Most women would say the children. Okay, now women are single. All they have to do is to keep Shabbat, modesty, all the other laws, and they're blessed. What's the Torah say? This is the laws that a person would do and will bring him life, bring him happiness. The Torah should bring a person happiness. A person should feel lucky. Every minute of my life, I live according to the rule of the Creator of the world. He loves me. I satisfy him. He's happy from what I do. I bring Kiddush Hashem to the world. How can he not be happy? If you are a representative of Bill Gates, he puts a signature on a tag and he puts it in your pocket. Everywhere you go, it says Bill Gates' personal advisor. How much ego and pride is going to bring to your life everywhere you go? Wow, yeah, wow, wow. You work for Mr. Gates? What Mr. Gates? Or Obama? We represent the creator of the world. It's a trillion, trillion, trillion until tomorrow times better than them. Well, what's the connection? But this is what the Torah say, by the way. Hashem say to the Jews, I'm punishing you, not because you don't keep Torah and mitzvot. This is in the time of the Torah. Because you did not serve me with simcha uvetuv levav, with joy and happiness and great feeling. For that I'm judging you. Not that you don't keep Shabbat. Everyone was keeping Shabbat. Everyone was modest in those days. That you felt in your heart that you're losing something. Instead of dancing on the street, I'm a Jewish woman, I'm a princess. I have every minute an opportunity to represent God in the world. I'm the closest person from 7 billion people in the world. I live according to God's rules. Instead of laughing and being happy, depressed, oof, that, oh, it's too modest. What is this? You should be happy. Thank you very much. Thank you to Michelle for organizing. Thank you to Judy. I have to thank you a million times. Beautiful. You made a great event. Thank you very much.